We're just going to pick up a little bit now on that reading that Simon shared from Matthew chapter 28. You can find it in the Pew Bibles if you want to. It's on page 1000. There you go, that's an easy number. Page 1000 of the Pew Bibles, Matthew chapter 28. And there's something interesting, I think, about this reading, because it's the amount of times that people are basically told to go. Again and again, people are told to go. The angels who appear to the women who've come to the tomb say he is risen from the dead and is going ahead of you. The first thing they're told is that Jesus is already going ahead of them. They find that Jesus is gone, and again, what happens is we're pointed to what is next. He's not here, he is risen, just as he said, the angel says. Come and see the place where he lay, then go quickly and tell his disciples. They come, they find out that he's risen from the dead, and they're told to go and tell his disciples, and that Jesus is going ahead of them, and that they'll see him in Galilee. So they tell them, and they rush off to go and do as they're told. They rush off to go and to tell the disciples. But as they're going off doing that, they meet Jesus on the way. Verse 8, so the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. Greetings, he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. But they didn't stay there. They come, they meet the risen Jesus, but then they don't just stay there with him. One of the other accounts we read about Jesus telling them, don't just cling on to me. They don't stay there. He tells them again, do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers. They're to go and tell the disciples. Again, this message that they're to go and tell other people. And what are they to go and tell the disciples? Well, they're to go and tell the disciples to go. That even the message they're bringing about Jesus risen is that they're not just to stay where they are, they're to go. They're to go to Galilee where they'll see Jesus, that he's going ahead of them. And they do it, don't they? They go off and they tell the disciples, and the disciples go off and they go to Galilee, and the disciples go on and they go and tell others. How do we know that they do that? How do we know that they go on and they tell others? Because we know. Thank you, Sue. Gold star. You can have some chocolate later. Because we know, don't we? Because they've gone on and they've told others, who told others, who told others, and lots of others in the middle. And 2,000 years later, we're here and we know. Because people all over hundreds of years have gone and have told others. So what I want us to do a little bit is to think about our story this morning. How it is that we have come to be here. And to track it backwards. And if we could, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could track it all the way back over 2,000 years? But I won't name any names. I'm not sure even the oldest people here could track it back that far. Anyway, I'm not sure we can. But I wonder how far we might be able to track it back. Just looking at children, looking at their parents going, no, can't go back that far. No, okay. But I wonder how far we can get. I've got a little timeline. If you can be clever with the camera for a moment, people can see my little timeline. Well, it's not a little timeline, it's a big timeline. There we go. There we go. So we've got 2000, it's backwards. So I'm sorry it will confuse any obsessive compulsive people. It's backwards because 2015 is at this end. And we go all the way back. I've gone back as far as the 1800s. Okay? You'll see why in just a moment. I want to tell you a little bit of my story and how this works for me to help give you an idea. There should be a PowerPoint that goes with this. Thanks, Tony. So, if I work backwards, it was 2008 that I came to Slough Baptist Church. So I'm going to whack a little post-it on there. But in 2008, I came to Slough Baptist Church, and you guys called me here as your associate pastor. Before that... Oh, giving it away. No, stop it. Anyway, before that, I was at this church. This is Dorchester Baptist Church. And I was there in about 2004. I did an internship working with that church. And it was that church that helped me think about what I should do next and helped me on my way to studying theology. It's one of the important steps for me along my journey. As well at that church, in 2002, I was baptized. So a few years before that, when I was 15, in 2002, I got baptized. But an important step on that journey, for some of you, you know that my dad's a vicar. An important step for me was leaving my dad's church. I know that sounds strange, but I wouldn't be where I was today if my parents hadn't actually encouraged me to go to a different church, because the church they were in didn't have any young people in it. And they encouraged me to go to the Baptist church in the town. And that was in about the year 2000 that we did that. And I started going to that church. And I wouldn't be where I was today if it wasn't for that. I perhaps also wouldn't be where I was today if my dad hadn't become a vicar. That's my dad's ordination. And I'm the one down on the right-hand side, the younger one. That's my older brother there. And that was in about 1990 that we started moving around the country. And I think if my dad hadn't become a vicar, he wouldn't have ended up in a church with no young people in it, and I wouldn't have ended up in the Baptist church. So God had a strange way of working things. But I wouldn't be where I was today if I hadn't been born into a Christian family. Oh, this is my dedication. That's my mum, my dad, my granddad and my nan and my older brother there. And that's in about 1986. So I was privileged enough to be born into a Christian family and have them sharing faith with me from a very young age. But I was born into a Christian family because my dad became a Christian. And this is the church where my dad became a Christian. My dad grew up on a council estate called the Sion Estate, which some people might vaguely know because it's only in West London. It's in Brentford, the Sion Estate. And there was a Sion Mission Church. And my dad became a Christian in that church in about the 1960s. There we go. But my dad grew up in that church and became a Christian in that church because he grew up... There we go, that's the church. Sadly, now it's closed down. But he was born into a Christian family himself in 1956. My dad was born into a Christian family. And we'll go back, you can see my... There you go, that's my granddad. So that's my dad's dad on the left-hand side there who... became a Christian, and my granddad became a Christian at this same church in 1933 at the age of 9. This was the church that was on the council estate where he lived and he grew up, this rough estate. And he was telling me the story just last night that apparently there was a Brethren church in Ealing, a really good big church that a lot of people really loved. And he said a group of people from that church decided that they would leave there and they would plant into this rough estate, and they would come and they would do what they could to serve that community and to share the gospel with them. And that's how my granddad became a Christian, through their willingness. And still now, he was saying he couldn't speak highly enough of them, that they were willing to leave a church that they loved to go into a rough community and to help them know something of the gospel. So that was all the way back in 1933 that my granddad became a Christian. But it goes back a bit further than that, because the only reason that church was there, the Sion Mission Church, was because of this guy. This is the 7th Earl of Shaftesbury. And those who are good at history will know stuff. If you're like me, you know nothing, and I had to look it all up on the internet. But this is the 7th Earl of Shaftesbury, and he's the guy who kind of founded what became known as the Shaftesbury Society. In 1844, he became president of what at that time was the Ragged Schools Union, which was the first schools providing free education before there had to be free education. Then a little further down the line, in 1880, when schools began, public education started, the places they'd set up, like this, that were there to provide education, began to become mission centres. Under this guy's leadership, they began to become mission centres. They sought to serve the community and share the gospel with people around them. And that's the reason that that church was there in the middle of that community, for those brethren to come and be a part of it, and for my granddad to become a Christian. Because in 1844, this guy went out to make a difference. So I can get back to 1844. I didn't go back any further than that. But, there you go. I'll see if anyone can beat me. I had to do research, you've only got this morning. So what I'd like you to do is, around you, there are some post-it notes. There will be some pens around, or you might already have a pen with you. And I'd like you to join in with doing a bit of tracing back. How far in your story? What are the significant steps along the way that you can put down. Maybe it was being born into a Christian family. Maybe it's a friend who shared something. Maybe it's someone significant who helped you. When did you come to this church for the first time? When were you baptized? What are the significant steps? If you're not a Christian yet, that's absolutely fine. But what have been the steps that have got you to being here this morning? What are some of the significant steps that have left you to be here? Maybe it was getting married. Maybe it wasn't. Whatever it might be. If you're... Oi! You're enthusiastic and that's good, but I'm not finished giving you my instructions. There's post-its in the pew, so you can use those. If you're really little and you don't want to write, maybe you want to come and draw a little self-portrait on my timeline of when you were born, perhaps, if that suits, or when you were dedicated. I've got some pens, you can do that. If people can bring them down and stick them on, younger ones want to come stick them on, it's helpful if you can write the year on the post-it so we know where to stick it. And for those younger ones or slightly bigger ones who are coming and sticking things down, I think Rachel might have some chocolate for you because she's nice like that. So we'll do that as we go. So you've got a few minutes. See how far back you can get with those around you. Now you can go. There you go. Do you want to give out some pens for me? No. They've all got post-its where they are, but no pens. Anyone need a pen? Anyone need a pen? Anyone need a pen? Anyone need a pen? Always good. I have. Okay. Thank you all very much for taking part in that. Someone has done well. Someone has got back to pre my 1844. I think possibly just one person. Someone's gone back to, I think it was 1803, the Napoleonic War. You had to come and explain that one to me afterwards as to how that links in to your story. I'd be keen to hear. So someone's got back to the early, very early 1800s. Surprisingly enough, we've got a lot around the kind of 2010, 2005 era. Quite a few post-its there and some nice drawings as well too. And then thinning out a little bit. A lot as well around kind of 1950. Quite a bit seeming around 1950, 1960. Quite a lot going on there. And a good few around 1900. And someone's going back to try and win. What was that? There we go. Jesus died for Darren Mon's sins, year zero. Someone got it. Good. Wouldn't it be great if we could go all the way back? Wouldn't it be great if we could map all the way back? We know it's there because we are here and we can't do that. But the question that I wanted to ask as we finish off this little bit is, what's the next bit look like? Oh, that went a lot further than I thought. Stop. Thank you. What does the next bit look like? Because there's all these people, perhaps, who've influenced us, who've got us to this point today. But what does the next bit look like? Jesus said to his disciples that he was going ahead of them, and he continues to go ahead of us today. He continues to work in people's lives. And we don't know, the truth is we don't know, the impact that, thank you, the impact that a few words, that offering kindness and friendship, a few small actions or sharing the gospel with an individual or a group of people could have in hundreds of years to come. I fully expect that Lord Shaftesbury, the Earl of Shaftesbury, had no idea the impact that his actions would have over 100 years later. What things can we go out and do? Maybe just small things that will be the next bit of this timeline that means in maybe 100 years there'll be people looking back and look back to maybe the small things that we did that changed their lives. It's an exciting day today because Yvonne is going to come and be baptised shortly, an example of one person's life being changed and transformed by the good news of Jesus Christ, by his death and resurrection that we celebrate today. And in a moment, we're going to come and hear her story, her looking back over the timeline, if you like, of how she's got to this point at the moment. But before we do that, we're going to sing a song. We're going to sing together, "Take My Life and Let It Be." Take the next bit of this timeline, the next bit of my life, and let it be for Jesus' glory, for his kingdom. And while we sing this song, we're going to take up our offering. If you're visiting here, please don't feel any obligation to give. It is really for those who are regulars. So please do feel free just to let the bag pass you by this morning. Let's stand and sing together.